Thank you all for coming. This is the entitled Biosurveillance Evaluation of SNOMED CT's Terminology. We called it the BEST trial, it's kitschy, and it was about coverage of chief complaints, which is the national standard for how we transmit information and gather information for biosurveillance. I recently moved from the Mayo Clinic, where I've been there for 12 years, and we're still keeping a lab there, to Mount Sinai in New York, at this wonderful opportunity to be able to translate things from the lab into the practice very easily by having appointments both academically for informatics for the entire institution in two veins, first as vice chair of the Department of Medicine and also as center director reporting to the dean. And then I actually am vice president of the hospital, so I can actually translate things into practice. So this is, for me, was a very interesting opportunity. So I'm looking forward to that and hope you'll all join me in this fight to get comparable data into healthcare. So what do we mean by that? Well, what we mean is that we want to take data. We want to take that data and analyze it and get information. We want to take that information and we want to apply it to some sort of a concern, like a public health concern to a patient, and get knowledge. And we take two pieces of knowledge and we put them together to learn something we could not have known from either piece of knowledge separately, we get intelligence. And we believe that this will lead to better public health response. So if you think of this in a public health-centric way, you have outbreak one and outbreak two, and they're all indexed by the same underlying ontologies. And these ontologies are national standard ontologies that have their own organizations. Now we start to find commonalities and directions with the same inclusion-exclusion criteria between them. And this allows us to begin to do multi-center data sharing. And this is where the rubber meets the road, from the ground up rather than from the top-down view of health information exchange. So our view of this is maybe a little different than some people's, and I'm going to show you this in a number of different contexts. We take data and we organize that data by ontologies. And then we have a generic expert system shell, and then we let people, experts, subject matter experts, write rules against those expert systems. So another way to think about that is there's only three types of knowledge in the world. Three types, that's all there is. One is ontologic knowledge. Ontologic knowledge is definitional knowledge, okay? And then the second kind of knowledge is assertional knowledge. Assertional knowledge are facts. So if you know something like you have a flail mitral leaflet, it leads to, you know, flash pulmonary edema, or, you know, that if you have an outbreak of West Nile virus, some people will go on and get meningitis. You know, there are a variety of facts we have in medicine that are not definitional. One third of all type 1 diabetics will go on to have end-stage renal disease. These are facts in medicine. And then the third is instance data. You know, Peter Elkin had a pneumonia. So what we're taking here is this instance data, specific instance data about patients, and we're organizing that instance data by standard ontologies that define formally what these concepts mean. So then we take, this is a set of mathematics we've just described and we're publishing called conceptual relativity that actually takes and gives you a formal mathematical model for how far apart any two concepts are in medicine. So it gives you the distance. And then you can take that as a compositional function so you can describe a case definition. And then you can ask the question, okay, show me all the cases within some fixed distance of this definition. And then you can vary that distance, get an ROC curve, and that sort of thing. So we think that's kind of neat. And by the way, we actually got picked up as a work of art by the American College of Physicians. About 7,000 physicians saw it. We got made the papers in Philly. We were really proud of that. So then you take this, okay, so now what are you doing? You've got this ontologic knowledge, you built it up, and you've got these little semantic networks inside of bigger semantic networks inside of bigger semantic networks, all predicated on the semantics that you've connected all the knowledge with. And now you can create these intelligent agents, or these little two-headed guys are supposed to be, who walk through this and find associations that nobody would have thought to think of, that in all the world you never would have thought, and they can be quite complex, which we think is one of the great opportunities. So this is a little bit of ontologies quick, and then I'll get to the actual trial and what we did in the numbers. This is a level one ontology. It's the HL7 reference information model. It's an older one. Did you actually write the slide? Is that why you're laughing? Because maybe Austin may have written this. Anyway, okay, well, so I shamelessly stole it from the HL7 site. This is entities which have roles and role relationships. They have some participation in an act, which have ACT relationships. You could fly to the moon with this as well as order a prescription. It's domain independent, which makes it a level one ontology. Level two ontology is a domain dependent ontology. There's lots of different ways. We made this one up. This is an EHR ontology that's made in UML2, which is basically a way of describing formal models. And here it talks about episodes of care, you know, adverse events, diagnoses, procedures. Everything goes through privileged clinicians, through encounter, non-encounter events, single point of audit at episodes of care, and it's fully secure. Talks about stuff we talk about in healthcare. A level 3 ontology is the fully encoded clinical record, or the details. This must be consistent with the level 1 and level 2 ontologies for health, and it has to be done in the routine course of care in order for it to be effective. And the goal behind this is that we can actually put a stake in the ground in the 21st century where it really ought to be. So what we really want to do is define our concepts very crisply based on these ontologies and then use them in a semantic network in order to know more about patient care. And this is really 21st century thinking. Oh, this just happens to be our technical architecture. If you care about that, I can go into that later, but I've got a few slides I want to get through. Oop, went backwards. This is a caricature. You know, this is how things work. You have data, it gets transcribed, it gets mapped against the formal ontologies by a terminology server that gets stored in EMR as codes. When you have a query, it comes in English, it gets coded into the same languages, which would be SNOMED, LOINC, and RxNorm for the most part are the ones we're using currently. We also have terminology servers for ICD-9, CPT, MESH, and Medicine, and others. So we can do for specialized things that we wish to do. So SNOMED, a little bit about SNOMED since we're talking about it. It's a description logic-based terminology. It's a compositional system, so it can let you build compositional expressions. It comes out of the box without 370,000 concepts and about 1 million terms. And in our lab, we add a lot of terms to that to make it clinically friendly because pathologists don't talk like every other specialty. And if you're a pathologist, you can get me later. And then we build about 30 to 60 million indices on top of it to make it run real fast. And so here's a little bit about compositional systems. So, you know, I like Legos. You know, I have a lot of friends in Denmark now, so I like the Lego example. My kids played with them when they were little. The great thing about Legos is you could build something that had greater functionality than in some of its parts. Just like this Lego train has greater functionality than the sum of its parts, you know, the compositional expressions do as well. They can describe things that have greater richness than each of the pieces. And this is we know about medicine. We do this all the time by building on what's come before in the patient's history in order to define a course of events or an outbreak or, you know, in an individual patient case, the difference in understanding of the patient's condition as we do more testing and we work the patient up. So here are four unimpeachable guys at the Mayo Clinic, William Warhol Mayo, Will Charlie, and Henry Plummer, the first internist. And they may have exactly the same disorder they're talking about, but they may describe it with different words. And what we do is we coordinate that, put it into a common model, basically, and that model is modeled in SNOMED, in this case, SNOMED CT. So, yeah, I just had to throw that in. This is what that made me think of. I thought for a public health crowd, what do you guys think? You know. So here's another thing. I just throw this in because I really like this, and I'm trying to convince everybody of this. So it's almost a non sequitur. One of the things that we really believe in is that we can anonymize data and ship data in a much more acceptable way from a larger proportion of the records if we only send the codes. So can anybody tell me what's wrong with this patient? Can anybody tell me who it is? No, of course not. The story's gone, but all the information is there. Every single piece of information is coded in these SNOMED codes. And if you know the SNOMED codes, you can pick out what some of the things are. We envision a time when there's a pseudo-identified set of records that are sent where every salient piece of clinical information is sent in a codified form, but the story, the text, is not sent there. So the fact that you were taking care of the mayor's wife or the quarterback of the football team in town or any of that all goes away, all those other identifiers, along with name and address as we're anonymizing it. I believe that we can get the American public to accept a much larger proportion of data being sent in a form that looks like this and is not so easily identifiable. So these are pseudo-anonymized records with the translation tables held locally, and this can track across visits and episodes of care because it's the same pseudo-identifier for the same patient. And though that's it. So actually, so then you have facts. How the granularity of the facts are: patient, document, section, subsection, problem, sentence, compositional expression, concept level detail. So it's very detailed. So okay, now getting to the trial. I gave you the intro about what we're doing and how we're doing it. This was a trial where we took 50,000 outpatient clinical records. They came from adult medicine and pediatrics, and they were all either limited exams or general exams. Okay, they weren't like miscellaneous notes, nursing notes, all that was gone. Just general exams, miscellaneous exams from physicians. And of the 50,000, only 36,097 had a non-null chief complaint. So a little less than 14,000, the chief complaints were empty. And then we took all the visits through the flu season, they're December through February, 2002, 2004, 2004, 2005. Then we randomly selected 1,035 of the chief complaints that actually had data in them. Okay, so these had to be ones that were non-null. Okay. And then we had two board-certified internists, one was an infectious disease specialist and one was a general internist, review the mappings of the 1,035 chief complaints, and then where they disagreed, a third board-certified internist adjudicated. So here's an example of an exact match. So we had a complete match. This was one code in the chief complaint. This is what it coded to in SNOMED. There's the SNOMED code. And this is sort of a window of the little, we have an online little review tool that lets us do validation of the work that we do. Here's one with the compositional expression that came up. It was leg ulcers in both of the lower extremities. And this had this is the SNOMED construction that came up. And they considered that to be a good match. Here's one that was more complicated that was considered a good match. Here's a rash in the right hand and the left ankle. And so this came up as an eruption which has finding site hand, has laterality right, and has ankle region structure and has laterality left. And that was also considered by the reviewers to be a good construction. Here's one where we missed. We had to learn from this. We had Mrs. Volkman, this very pleasant 49-year-old woman who presents today for follow-up of abdominal pain consistent with presumed diverticulitis. And out of Mrs. Volkman, we got Volkman's contracture. Which is trouble. So that was an example of one that missed. So in the end, what happened was we took these chief complaints, and out of those, we had a sensitivity of 98.7%. We had a specificity of 81%, and a positive predictive value of 97.4%. Overall, it had a fairly good positive and negative likelihood ratio for the test. And so SNOMED was, we believe, fairly good at identifying these chief complaints. We had previously published the accuracy of the mapping engine, which you might ask about, and the mapping engine had very good reliability in the references below. So then we actually wanted to go one step further and look at what was the, I was a little afraid about publishing just this because it might imply that chief complaints were good, and I wanted to do a few more studies, and we're publishing these studies here and in two things. So I wanted to also tell you about some of the follow-up studies we did. So one of the things we want to do is check on the value of chief complaints for biosurveillance. So we had a case-controlled study. These were 1,455 cases of PCR-positive influenza A or B. And we had 1,467 controls who were tested for influenza but tested negative. And these were pulled from a larger cohort of people who were tested negative as match set. Same exact method, the method here was the chief complaints were reviewed by two independent clinicians, and again, a third clinician adjudicated the disagreements. And they were asked two questions. Was there any manifestation of the flu? And was there a good case definition of the flu? Okay. So here was the case definition, basically, that we came up with for the flu. And the blue things are positive assertions, red things are negative assertions, and if there were green things, they'd be uncertain assertions in the piece. And you can see that they're fairly well described. And here was the radiological report piece of this. So here's a flow diagram of this particular study. So what we wanted to do was to get the index note that caused them to take the swab. Okay? So we wanted to evaluate that note and its value for predicting whether the swab would be positive or not. Thought that was okay. Anyway, so of the 1,455 influenza cases, 1,371 had a note. Of the 1,467 control patients, only 705. Of those, some of them were non-null and some were null chief complaints in each category. So we had 10,063 non-null chief complaints, 308 null in the influenza group, and 683 non-null and 22 null in the control group. And the reason, we're kind of thinking, what was the reason for there being less people that had a note in the control group? And I think that's because a lot of the time when people weren't quite as sick, they called up and they weren't told to see their doctor. They just said, come in and get a swab. And they didn't get a note. They just got a swab. And that was sort of what happened. So we wanted to show sort of the value of this. So if you look at these chief complaints and you look at the SNOMED concepts, they really give you much more information than you get from the one code. So for example, I'll take cough. So cough has this code in SNOMED, right? And there are 63 subtypes of cough in terms of concepts that are underneath just plain old cough. But if you look at the number of terms that are associated with that, there are 169 terms. So if you do an explosion of this, use all the subtypes for specifying cough and saying exploded or take all the subconcepts and subterms, you get 169 strings that you're looking for really in the text. And this generated this kind of retrieval set in the data. Now if you look at the combinations of these where you have multiple, you know, so a really great case definition was cough, fever, sore throat, had pretty good, really good predictive value, but only 34 people had that. If you get down to fever and cough, it was less specific, but 162 people had it. And I'll show you how that worked out in the data in a second. So looking at this, 44% of these chief complaints for people who really had the flu had at least one flu concept in them. Now, greater than one flu concept, only one in five had. And a really good case definition, which we defined as two or more, three or more concepts that were associated with the flu, only 3% of the people who had the flu had that level of detail from their chief complaint. So the identification of influenza in true influenza cases with at least one, if we said at least one, so one or more combining it, you could get up to maybe 52%. That was the best you could do in terms of identification from non-null chief complaints, and that wasn't diluted for the null ones, it was just the number for the non-null ones. So here's the results table for this, and you can, when we look at the numbers, you can see that the C statistic for this was not that great. It was okay. I mean, it just meeting the case definition of the flu was 0.59, meets the case definition or any sign of the flu, 0.65. And then, when you took this in aggregate, the model that gets generated by these had a total of 0.67 as a C statistic, which was not all that great. And actually, in a later study with a different method for generating the C statistic for the chief complaints, we did a little better than this. And I'll show you that method if you come to my next talk. So let's try the hooker. So here we looked at, but was it statistically significant? So let's take a look at how well chief complaints that had a signal were able to distinguish between whether the chief complaint gave you information about whether the patient had the flu or not. And so with one flu concept, the sensitivity of the cases was 32.3 and of the controls was 28.7. And that was statistically significant, but it only had an absolute risk reduction of about 4.6%. If you look at one flu concept or more, this went from 52.8 down to 36.5 in the controls. And this again was significant. And you can see that here you get a reduction of about 16.3%. And that's the risk reduction that you get by knowing that you have a positive flu concept in the chief complaint. The best, most discriminative test, of course, was a good case definition. You have the good case definition when you found it, although only 3% of the time you found it, then that went from 20.4 to 7.9, and that was the biggest difference between the two. So you do get some information from the chief complaints, but you don't get it as often as you'd want, and you don't get the level of predictive value that you would like. And our goal was to take these through a predictive model and to build up a model of a case definition. One of the things that we did, and this is the hooker to come to the next talk, which we'll talk to you about, is we took this and compared this data with whole record analysis, what we could get out of the chief complaint with what we could get out of the entire clinical record. And I can't tell you the answer to that, or you won't come to my next talk, see? So part of the next steps for this was to do that part, and we're also looking at case definitions for some of these other infective agents. And obviously there's been a mandate to try to use SNOMED for this purpose. Here we have case definitions, which we're happy to share for each of these additional types of exposure, and I'd be happy to give them. My slides are being made available. You know, somebody told me this slide was doctored. I don't know.
Yeah, that's true.
You think? I don't know. It seemed urgent to me. So the idea that what I want to leave you with is that SNOMED CT-based NLP can provide you with more complete data. It can be a fully automated approach, that it's standards-based, that you can, in our philosophy, you parse the data once and use it for many purposes. So you have that whole parse, then you can go into it for whatever reason that you need to get data out of it. And each time you want a new extract, you don't have to go back to the source, you've already got your extract, you can just ask the questions of that that parsed data. And that we think that surveillance using case definitions provides more relevant and actionable data, and that public health needs an accurate and fully automated mechanism for standards-based biosurveillance and situational awareness. And I think these standards like LOINC and SNOMED CT are part of that puzzle. And I thank you for your kind attention, and I hit the wrong button. Thank you guys very much. You've got a great audience.
We'll have our next, any questions, maybe? Go ahead, Cecil.
Hi, Peter, you showed your level one ontology in your webinar.
Well, that was mine, it was HL7.
Where did you use that?
Peter, do you want the mic?
Sure, I'd love the mic. Cecil, hi, thank you for the question. So where do we use it? Okay, so the way that we store the data is RIM compliant. And so we have a model that we build underneath the RIM that actually organizes the overall data so that we can connect other data sources.